I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together, we're Rome and Oz. Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out. AllAussieRadio.com.au.
Now syndicated too.
Backwater Country. 87.6 FM.
Tuesdays and Fridays.
At 9 PM.
All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, we start off in Tasmania.
Yeah.
In Lowhead.
Right.
And I have the pleasure of meeting Cindy. Now, Cindy runs the Penguin Tours in Lowhead.
Yes, that's correct. And they are amazing tours. It's really worth the money to go and do it.
And isn't she incredible? Like, she actually, she's like the penguin whisperer.
I know. She could hear penguins before we even heard or saw them.
I thought, this is just part of the show, you know. But she's going, look, there's a school of them out there, and it's pitch black, it's dark. Chitter-chattering away. They're going to come out here in just a moment, and sure enough, they all come bounding out of the surf. She's incredible. So that's Cindy from the Lowhead Penguin Tours,
yes,
the Penguin Whisperer. Then straight after that,
You chat to Ron and Zanette. Yep, at the Lowhead Precinct Lighthouse Museum.
Now, the Precinct Lighthouse Museum's fascinating as well, isn't it?
Yes. And if interesting stuff in there.
Oh, absolutely. But what about if you go there when they blast that foghorn?
Yes, on a Sunday. You need earplugs, that's for sure.
You need earplugs, earmuffs, because it is so loud.
Yes.
It's louder than a jet engine.
And it vibrates through your whole body.
Reverberates through your body, through the foundations on the side of the hill. And it's just an incredible experience, but make sure, do yourself a favour, people, you know you want to. Don't go out there unless you've got some sort of ear protection.
I know.
Because it's pretty darn loud, I've got to tell you that. And then they've got the little museum, which they put together themselves.
They did.
Flotsam and Jetsam.
Interesting stuff.
So it's Ron and Zanette, not Flotsam and Jetsam. No. That's what they collect off the beach. Really, really interesting that. And then from Lowhead in Tasmania, we go to Thallon.
Yes.
Now, this is going to be incredible.
This is interesting, this one.
This is really interesting. We're going out there. We were chatting with Jana from the Thallon State School.
PNC,
she's on the PNC committee. And the PNC committee are running a truck pull.
Truck pull, yes, I know. I thought it was two trucks pulling, but it's actually humans pulling a truck.
It's actually six people to a team, and they have to pull a 12-ton truck 25 metres.
Yeah. Now, that's just the
prime
front
mover.
Yeah, that bit.
Just the prime mover. Not the trailer as
no,
well.
No.
So, look, apart from all these fabulous discussions, we've also got a great selection of music as requested by the people we interview. So, Lynn, what do you think?
On with the show.
G'day, listeners. Phil C here. This is Roman Oz, and we are at Lowhead, and I'm chatting with Cindy from Lowhead Penguin Tours. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Fabulous. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. First of all, I want to say what an incredible tour we had last night. It was a bit windy afterwards. We were going to chat with you last night, but you made a good judgment call. It was a bit cold. You could see us trembling. And we're doing it now in the boathouse, which is absolutely lovely. So first of all, tell us about yourself, Cindy. How long have you been doing the tours?
I've been doing the tours between 14 and 15 years.
Okay.
I started doing the tours because the owner at the time needed a guide, as the guide had passed away, which was my father.
Oh.
And she said, well, I need another one now, so I started.
So you took over from Dad?
Yep.
So how long was Dad doing the tours for?
Probably about 5 years.
And how long have you been doing the tours?
Nearly 15.
Nearly 15. Amazing. So did you used to go out on the tours with Dad?
Nope.
Not at all?
Not at all.
Because last night, as you were wandering through the sand and pointing things out to us, you were able to hear every sound of what was going on in the water. You were telling us about how the birds are out there, the penguins are out there, and they were communicating to each other. How long did it take you to pick that skill up?
It takes a little while to stop the background noise.
Right.
So you have to stop the wind in your head, the waves, and then when you get past that, then you'll start hearing the birds chatter. So you hear the birds in the water, they sound like ducks. You will hear the birds on the land talking to them.
Right.
And then you will hear a couple of other different styles of birds there, telling each other stories as well.
Wow. Amazing. So you're the penguin whisperer of Lowhead.
Apparently, but no, not quite.
So you've been with them for 15 years. Dad was 5 years before. When did the tours start?
So the tours started in 1996. There was an oil spill out at Hebe Reef, which is just out from us, and the Iron Baron ran aground there, and they had to collect the penguins as they had oil on them.
Okay.
And once they'd done that, Parks and Wildlife needed people there to monitor the area, and a group of locals started the business.
Okay.
And then one person kept the business running, and she was there until last year, so she was there over 20 years.
Okay.
And that's how it started.
Wow. Amazing. So what types of penguins can people expect to see when they come on one of your tours?
So the penguins all around Australia are the same.
Okay.
So they are fairy penguins, but you can also have them called little or blue, but their scientific name is Eudipula minor. Still the same penguin.
Eudipula
minor.
Eudipula minor. Okay, I'll have to remember that. Now, tell us about the penguins. They're blue penguins, you said. Now, on the tour last night, you said they've got the very distinct blue on the top, white underneath. What is the idea of that?
So the blue and white works really well because they are a bird of the ocean. So the blue, when predators are flying above, they cannot see them because they're blue like the water.
Mm-hmm.
Predators that swim underneath them, like sharks and seals, cannot see them because they're white like the sunlight.
Okay.
Put them on land and they don't match.
Yes, well, I can imagine that. And they're not very fast on land. We saw them hobbling about last night as they came out of the water. Tell us a bit about that. First of all, one penguin came out. He was lone, standing on the shore, having a bit of a surf, and he was looking around everywhere, really curious. What was that all about?
So it's usually a young male.
Okay.
He wants to show the group how awesome he is at it. So he will come out. He will check the area to make sure it's safe. And then once he believes that it's safe, he will call the other birds out of the water.
Okay. And it's always a male?
9 times out of 10 a male, but a younger male. An older male won't do it because he's not stupid. So a younger male will do it because he wants to show the group he's a great leader and he wants a female.
So when you say young male, what's the difference in age between a young male and an old male? When they're silly and when they're smart?
Well, a younger penguin that comes out is over 2, but they're very close to 2.
Okay.
Older penguins can range up to 9 years old, but we have actually tagged our penguins in 1995 with the oil spill. Penguins that come out of the water have to be 2 years old.
Okay.
They can be older, but they're definitely 2. And that is what we class as a younger penguin because they're only just starting to come out to learn what they're supposed to do. We still had a tag bird from 1995, 6 years ago, so they actually were over 20 years old.
Wow. But that'd be rare, wouldn't it? Because there would be predators. They're very well disguised, obviously. But what do you think the average age of a penguin would be? He's probably the senior, 20. Would they last 10 years easily?
I would say 10 years would be a good estimate around here in our area because they don't need to go that far for food.
Okay.
If they had to travel constantly, then they're food for other animals. But their area here in the Tama River is their main food source.
So when you say up to 2 years of age before they come out of the water, they live in the water for 2 years?
If they want to.
If they want to?
Yep.
Okay, so what do they do for sleeping and so on? So they must rest. They can't just swim for 2 years.
So what they'll do is they'll sit on a rock.
Okay.
They'll have a nana nap in the ocean if they want to. Penguins are polyphasic, which is they only need a few minutes sleep every few hours.
Okay.
So they can lay on top of the water and have a really quick sleep, a solid 10 seconds, or they will lay on the land.
A solid 10 seconds. A micro sleep behind the wheel of a car and you'll be dead with that.
Yep.
10 seconds of resting. Wow. So tell us the difference between the male and the female. How can you distinguish them?
So a male has a larger head and broader shoulders than a female.
Uh-huh.
Honestly, can't tell the difference. The difference for me is the beak. So right. The male beak goes along and turns down at the front.
Right.
A female beak is flatter. They still have a little bit of a chipping tooth at the end of their beak, but it's not like the males. The males goes right down at the front.
Okay. And what's the diet? What do they live on, the penguins, the fairy penguins?
So here in our area, their food source is in the Tama River. So we have a seaweed forest in the Tama River that has sea horses, sea mm-hmm. dragons. They will eat that. They'll eat crabs, bait fish and squid.
Okay. And you mentioned last night, tell us about their beak structure. You mentioned about the way their teeth are designed in their beak.
Yeah, so they have areas inside their beak which are bone areas that look like teeth, but they actually go backwards.
Right.
So they suck in live food, and when it comes back up, they chew it to kill it.
Okay. Okay. So the idea, if one comes close to you, don't think, oh, how cute is he, and try and pat him on the head.
Never pat a penguin. I don't care how cute they are. They can look after themselves quite nicely. If you put your fingers near their beak, they will shred all the meat off your fingers.
Wow. Now, how large are these creatures? Because you imagine something that's going to shred the meat off your fingers.
I know.
How big are they, the penguins?
So, honestly, they will be around about 33 centimetres. But if you think of a school ruler, about 45 centimetres, that's pretty much what you're going to get. A male may stretch out to look really big because he wants a girlfriend or 10.
Okay.
But normally it's about 33 centimetres and they only weigh about a kilo and a half.
Okay, so they're a very cute looking animal, but obviously don't try and pat them or pick them up or do any of that kind of stuff because it's just not good. Yeah.
No.
So what about their mating cycle? What age do they start to mate? Because you said 2 years before they come out of the water. So what age? Is that when they start to become sexually mature enough?
Yeah. So once they start coming out, they're actually coming out to get ready to breed.
Okay.
So the males will come out and get the house ready. That's their job. And once they've done that, then they will call for a female. They'll sing. But the problem is every male will call for her because they're all trying to get that one girlfriend.
Right.
Even if they have one, they're going to go for another one. There's a backup girlfriend just in case the first one doesn't come home.
That's perfect. I like
that. Wow. Rude. So once they've done all that, the breeding cycle is she's gone, yes, okay.
Yes.
10 days later, they will have eggs. Most of the time, it's two eggs.
All right.
They actually can have three if they believe they can look after the three.
Okay.
And 35 days to incubate the eggs.
Okay.
Parents swap over every 5 days on the eggs. They don't actually sit on them all the time because they will go outside of a night time and play with their friends. And then the babies are born after 35 days and then both parents feed them that whole time for 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then the kids are ready to go into the ocean and the parents abandon them and they've got to figure it out themselves.
Wow. So from 8 weeks, no more assistance from parents.
Nope.
And the next 2 years more than likely in the water.
Yes, because they only should come on land to breed or to lose feathers.
Now tell us about the feathers, because you mentioned last night they've got like 12,000 feathers, is that correct?
Yep.
And you were saying that they've got a prune these feathers because of... Tell us about that, the pruning.
So penguins have an oil gland and they need to make sure that that oil goes on all their feathers. So they are continuously preening. So they have 12,000 feathers. Every feather must have oil on it. Then they will clamp that feather shut with the one next door and so no water gets onto their bare skin.
Okay. For the reason being that they could die from hypothermia
Yep.
And you mentioned that they can actually drown?
So if you could imagine the layers of feathers, if you have water in between the layers, that's extra weight on them.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're not healthy and they're not really thinking about it, then they're just going to drown.
Wow. Now, you did say that they also shed their feathers.
Yep, so once they're mature, so 2 years and on,
mm-hmm.
every year they must shed their feathers. So once a year they will go and eat as much food as they can to double their weight. Once they've done that, they will come and stay on the land for 20 plus days.
And it takes them 20 days to shed and to have new feathers.
Yep.
So one's pushing out the other.
Yeah, so they're not running around naked.
No.
So they do have new feathers pushing out old feathers at that time.
Oh, good. As you can tell, listeners, she is, she's got a wonderful personality. Cindy's her name. I think we've just about covered it all, haven't we? I think, Lynn, you were at the tour last night. Is there anything, Lynn?
No, I think you've covered everything there.
You've covered everything. Mm-hmm. So how often do the tours go out? Let's just for the benefit of the listeners, and how do they go about making a booking?
So you can book on the website. If you're unable to do that, by all means, you can call the number and we can do that for you. The tour runs every single night. Okay. We run about 15 to 30 minutes after sunset time.
Okay. And the reason for that is?
So the birds will get ready to come out, but they need to do that talking and tell each other stories in the ocean. And then when it's time to come out, it has to be dark. They just do not match anything on the ground.
Okay, and that's obviously for self-preservation.
Yep.
To come out in the dark.
Yep.
So how many penguins do you think you have out there?
We have a few thousand in the area. You will never, ever see that many.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that are coming in are curious to see who's on the land, or it's breeding time or molting time, or Fred's coming home, so Peter wants to come home and see why.
Okay. Fabulous. Amazing stuff. And you've been doing this for 15 years. You're obviously going to do it until you can no longer do it. It's a passion for you.
Oh, I think they're amazing.
They're an amazing creature. And I must say, for anybody who's in low head, it's definitely something recommended by me.
Awesome.
And also by Lynn. And if you do decide to take a tour, listeners, make sure you ask for Cindy, okay?
We have some guides, and I can promise you they're all just as good, thank you, if not better.
They're all just as good, but they're some of the younger ones, listeners, don't judge them by age or appearance, because the younger ones have got all the skills because they've been
100%.
Taught by Cindy. So Cindy, you pretty much run the show, don't you?
Yes, the old boss retired last year and I learnt everything off her. And some of our guides are from that generation.
Okay.
And the new ones coming through are learning as well.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
So how many guides do you have?
At the moment, I think we've got 14.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how many people, last night you had about three or four guides, I can't remember. And how many people did we have on the tour last night?
I think all up in the end it was 55.
55. Mm. So how many people, what's the maximum amount of people you've had on a tour?
There is no such thing as a maximum.
Okay.
Because I can put a certain amount of people, customers, with as many guides as I need.
Oh, okay.
And so the area that you went last night, I have that plus around the lighthouse, plus around the back of us as well.
So it's a huge area.
Yes.
And if a big crowd of people arrive, don't think, oh, gosh, we're not going to see anything. Look at all these people, because you're going to have more than enough guides and more than enough area to take each individual group.
Oh, yes. We're never, ever going to impact the penguin area.
Uh-huh.
So you will never have a huge group standing at one location. There are quite a few locations that we will put smaller groups, just like we had last night, as you've seen.
Yeah. So the tour runs for about 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah, it depends on the penguins. Yes.
How excited the penguins are to come and meet and greet.
Yes. Yes.
I do have a question, actually, Cindy. What about people with a disability, you know, a walking stick, a frame, a wheelchair? Can you cater for them or...?
Yes, so 2 weeks ago I had an amputee. We've had wheelchair, wheelie walkers, walking sticks. We had people that cannot see. We had people that cannot hear. As long as you let us know prior to coming, I will accommodate any ability ever.
That's
fabulous.
Wonderful.
And we do have vehicles that will take you down to the seated area.
Amazing.
Yes.
No, I didn't know that. I would have said I've got a sore knee. Can you?
Oh, well, there you go.
Can you drive me
no
down?
No surprise there.
Can you drive me down to the best viewing platform? Cindy, it's been a marvellous tour last night and fabulous chatting with you again today. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I'm going to have to wind this up now. Now, I always play an Australian song at the end of each discussion. Have you got a favourite singer, a favourite...
Well, the group, so all the guides, we put it out there to see who wanted to what, and we picked My Island Home. By Christine Arnoux.
Well, there you go. Thank you so much for your time, Cindy.
You're most welcome.
There you go, listeners. Cindy, and she is from Lowhead Penguin Tools. We'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after My Island Home by Christine Arnoux. G'day listeners, this is Phil C and you are listening to Roman Oz and we're at the Lowhead Lighthouse Precinct. And I'm with Ron and Zanette. How are you both going today?
Yeah, well, thank you.
Yeah, we're fine, thank you. Having a good day.
Thank you so much for inviting us down here. This is a magnificent place that we've got here. We've got a couple of things I'd like to talk to you about. Let's start with the lighthouse, and also you've got the sounding of the lighthouse. Before we get onto the sounding, tell us a little bit about the lighthouse, the history of the lighthouse.
Okay, cool. The current lighthouse was built in the 1880s, right. And it was built to replace one that was built in the 1830s,
mm-hmm.
but it was only made of very rough rock and very poor mortar, and so it started to fall to pieces. So the current one has just had its candle power updated from that period of time. In the 1920s, it got a fancy red band painted around it to make it more visible. The pattern or the character of the lighthouse is three short flashes,
okay.
and it works on a 360-degree rotation, so you can see it from whatever aspect you can see the lighthouse.
Okay. And do you know how far that beam shines?
No, I don't know how far, but certainly far enough to see in our upstairs bedroom window.
Now, what about the horn? You've got a horn there which... it's very loud. You said it was as loud as a jet engine, correct?
Correct, yes, yes. The associated foghorn that matches the lighthouse in as far as its pattern is concerned was installed in 1929, and right. all that equipment was brought over from England. Somehow they man-hauled it or horse-hauled it into place. And in the 1970s, the powers that be decided that such archaic or primitive type of signalling wasn't necessary, and so they decommissioned it.
Right.
Then in the early 2000s, a group of volunteers decided that it could be restored, and so from that time on, every Sunday at noon, we sound the foghorn, giving you three short blasts at 126 decibels, and you can hear it up to 30 kilometres away.
Wow.
It's the only one of its type still operational in the world, so we're very keen to preserve that piece of our maritime history.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the three short blasts occurs every 1 minute, so as long as the foghorn is sounding, you're going to hear three short blasts, 126 decibels every minute.
You think 126 decibels, as loud as a jet engine, does it vibrate and shake the foundations?
It certainly does.
Yes.
The foundations within the building, they shake, and the bedrock out the front where the resonator or the horn is placed, the bedrock vibrates, and if you happen to be standing under there, you vibrate too.
Wow, incredible. So obviously you've got to be wearing hearing protection.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely, yes.
So on the Sundays when you do this, do you get a large crowd of people who come to experience this?
Well, we do, yeah. There seems to be an increasing amount of interest in the foghorn, and we've had 70-plus people most Sundays in recent weeks. So, very pleasing, the interest. It's
mainly tourists, or do you get a few of the locals who wander up here on a Sunday, or they're just happy to hear it from there?
Yeah, it's mainly tourists, but yep. we do get locals that do come up quite mm-hmm. regularly to have okay. a listen, because I mean they can hear it from distances up to probably 10 km away from here.
Yes,
and on a good day, the sound will travel 30 km out to sea.
Out to sea,
yeah.
Wow. Oh, goodness me. Well, we're going to come up on Sunday and try to listen to that. Now, let's talk about the education centre, because this is amazing. This is where we're standing right now. And I understand, Ron and Zanette, you guys put this together yourself. Tell us about this incredible centre and why. Why did you do it? Where was the inspiration?
Well, the Heritage Section of Parks and Wildlife actually controlled this section of the building. And they have a problem with rising damp. Being an 1830s building, it hasn't got very fancy sort of a structure. And they invited us to use the building so it could be opened up and let it breathe a little bit more. So stemming from that, when we finally got the keys to it, Ron and I decided we could put a marine education centre together and have a place where young people and old people could come and learn a lot about the local marine environment.
Mm-hmm.
With very few exceptions, what we have in here are specimens that have been picked up locally, either by us or donated by other people.
Okay.
And we hope that people who come in will actually go away having learned something about their local marine environment.
Well, look, you've taught me. You've got shells out there. Tell us about the shells that burrow into other shells, because I knew nothing about that. And also the little bit you learned just yesterday about the bluebottles.
Yeah, well, these are just two little educational snippets, I guess. And you might have heard of a moon snail, which is a carnivorous marine snail.
Right.
And what his purpose in life seems to be is to burrow through the sand till he finds a bivalve, a little pippy or something similar. He then wraps his foot around it so it can't escape, and he has a special type of tongue called a radula, which is a saw type of protrusion. He then uses it to rasp his way into the shell by making a hole, continually rasping. He then injects some enzymes into the marine animal inside, which makes it into a soupy type of consistency, and then he sucks it back out and says, thank you very much, lunch done.
Sounds like a Stephen King movie. Sounds like some sort of a horror creature, doesn't it? Yet it's just a harmless little shell that you'd see on the beach, and you would have no idea what this guy is capable of doing.
Oh, absolutely. And I think lots of people have walked along the beach not seeing him because he's hiding in the sand, but seeing the other shells with the holes in them and come up with various theories as to how they might have got there.
Correct, correct. Yeah. Now, what about the blue bottle? Because that, again, now blue bottles are all over Australia, and I've only found that out today, that they actually, obviously they ride on the wind and the currents, but you said something about how half of them go in one direction and half go the other?
Yes, well, actually, I didn't know this till yesterday, so I'm learning every day as well, which is really great. The blue bottle is just a visitor to Tasmania. It's not where they normally are, but they tend to turn up increasing numbers, I think, over the last few years. But their little floaty has got a slight angle on it, and there's a proper term for that probably, but it's got a slight angle on it, and half of them appear to have it angled to the left, and half angled to the right, which means at least half of the population are going to get to float somewhere new.
Fantastic. So
pretty tricky.
And sting us poor innocent bathers.
Absolutely. And those tentacles can be a metre or more long. And being very thin and fine, then you don't see them.
No, no. They're a wretched creature. I don't know what their purpose is on the planet other than to upset bathers. Mm. Now, what about you? Before you did this, what did you actually do? What was your trade, Ron? Why did you decide, I want to put this education centre together?
Well, I was in business in Georgetown for 28 years. And when I retired, we both decided to go ahead with this after some time, because Sandy had become retired because she was a teacher for many years.
Yes.
And both of us have an interest in our surroundings and like collecting specimens off the beach and that. And over a lot of years we had gathered quite a lot of items. And then when the opportunity came up here, it was sounded a damn good idea to me to empty some cupboards in my tin shed at home of all these items and bring them up here to display.
For everybody else to see and enjoy. So before you did put this together, because how long did it take you to put this together again? The actual education centre?
Probably about 6 weeks.
Yeah, six weeks, 2 months,
and that was about 3 or 4 months ago.
Okay. Yeah. So it's only a recent addition to this area?
Yes, yeah. Still a work in progress.
Still a work in progress. 6 to 8 weeks to put together, but years of collecting, would you say, Ron?
Yeah, I would say so.
3 years of collecting.
Yeah. When the proposal was first put to us, we really put in a dedicated effort to find things to put on. So all the beach walks and that were done right across the north and northeast, we were finding a lot of items that were of interest. So we were carrying them home in the back of the car sometimes, some of them a little bit decomposed and a bit smelly, but anyway, they were fine after a while.
So what other things have you got out there, just for the benefit of the listeners? You've got the shells, Ron. What else would you have out there?
We have a giant crab, which most people think is one of the main exhibits here, and it'll be probably 13 inches across, I reckon.
Mm-hmm.
So that's across the body. That doesn't include the legs.
Yes.
And we've got quite a lot of smaller crabs around it, just to show what's around the area. We have lots of other fish examples, photographs, charts of what's the native Tasmanian fishes and dangerous species, protected species, sharks, etc.
Yes.
So that's all interesting.
Mm-hmm. And you've also got this map with the various lighthouses, because apparently you've got a lot of lighthouses in Tasmania.
Yes, I think that we've probably got fairly dangerous waters around Tasmania. Mm-hmm. Being an island, there's a lot of water.
Okay.
So we've got a map here of the major lighthouses of Tasmania. And further to that, we'll soon have a lighthouse model, which will be interesting in its own right, because it'll be six-sided and cut horizontally, so like a Rubik's Cube, you'll be able to flip it round till you see a picture of the Lowhead Lighthouse, flip it till you see, for example, Eddiston, and again, Matsaika.
Okay.
And then people have an understanding that not all lighthouses look the same, and they come in various sizes as well. Some are really tall and some are very short.
Fair enough. Well, it's been fascinating talking to you both. Now, this is a totally free to come here. I understand you're not open every single day. So how do people find out when's the best day? Is it just a Sunday or could people come on another day? If there was a group, how would they contact you?
Well, we're open at the Education Centre when the foghorn sounds on Sundays.
Yes.
Probably between 11:30 and 12:30 would be guaranteed.
Yes.
If you're lucky enough to be in the area up here and we're up here working, very welcome to come in.
Of course.
And we open both the Foghorn Building and the Education Centre.
Yes.
So we have had lots of people in and we're very, very happy with how it's all gone.
It's fabulous what you two people are doing. I think it's, and especially for the young ones, for the children. One other thing I wanted to point out, you've got a chart in there or a board in there showing how long things remain in the water before they completely decompose. For example, a battery can last up to 1,000 years in the water.
Yeah, that's right. And things like masks, which are a new type of rubbish, 450 years. Disposable nappies, 450 years. So these are projected times, of course.
Yes.
But it's certainly a learning experience to have a look at that chart. And if there are people interested and they're a small group, they can actually make a booking to come through the centre by going to or calling the Lowhead Pilot Station Museum.
Right.
So extra times for people to come through is possible. Yeah.
Look, I think what you're doing is fantastic, and especially the education side for the young ones, because even myself, I had no idea that a tiny little AA battery could last 1,000 years in the water. And I guess lots of people just don't consider what they put in the water, do they? Out in the boat, the can or the bottle could end up over the side, and as you said, a face mask could end up in the water, and these things are not good for the water, but also for the animals that live in the water. Plastic in particular, turtles eat plastic, not realising what it is. So definitely a great idea what you guys are doing, especially the education aspect of it. And before we go, you've got this thing here, which is you can actually take a picture home. Tell us what that's all about, because you said it was a 10-year-old who came up with this.
Yes, we've got a table with some rubbing templates put on top of it, and a local boy, a 10-year-old, using his grandfather's 3D printer, actually created these rubbing templates, so you can put a piece of paper over, rub over it with chalk, and then you have your own picture to take home of a scallop or a cowfish or a lighthouse. Whatever you like.
Absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us, Ron.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, yeah. My pleasure. And I hope we get lots of interesting people come along. You have to have a donation box out there, okay? Shame people into putting a dollar in there because it's well worth more than that.
Yeah, we do have a donation box, and we would encourage people to bring a gold coin with them when they come up here.
It'd be great.
It'd be very, very helpful.
Well, I'm gonna make note of that, and I'm gonna say make sure you bring a gold coin, because a dollar, what can you buy? You can't even buy a can of Coke. And we don't want to end it up in the ocean either. So a gold coin to meet you two fabulous people, be educated as to what's going on here with the lighthouse and the horn and so forth. Absolutely easy as.
Yeah, no, that's great. And we hope a lot of your listeners will come and visit us sometime.
That's the plan. That's the plan, Ron. I've got to wind this up now. My producer's giving me the wind up. What can I play for you? I always have to have an Aussie song. Who's your favourite Aussie artist? Who's your favourite song?
I think if you could find something from Paul Kelly that would suit the theme of our area, it would be greatly appreciated.
All right. Well, you leave that with us, and we will put on a Paul Kelly track suitable to the area, and it'll be straight on. And straight after that, there'll be more of Roman Oz. So stick around, listeners, for Paul Kelly, and we'll be back with more Roman Oz. Thank you so much, Ron and Zanette.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
On a crowded beach in a distant town, at the height of summer, see a boy of 5 at the water's edge, so nimble and free, jumping over the ripples looking way out to sea. Now a man comes up from amongst the throng, takes a young boy's hand, and his hand is strong, and the child feels safe, yeah, the child feels brave, as he's carried in those arms, up and over the waves, deeper water. Calling him on. Let's move forward now. And the child's 17 with a girl in the backseat.
Welcome back to the program, listeners. My name is Phil C. This is Corner Country, brought to you by allaussieradio.com.au and now syndicated to 97.7 Tasman FM and 87.6 Backwater Country. And we have got with us on the program this afternoon Jana, and she is the PNC committee member, one of the ladies responsible for the Thallon State School truck pool. How are you this afternoon?
Well, thank you, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing really, really well. Thank you for being part of the program.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I've done a little bit of research. I noticed that Thallon State School was established back in 1911. Now, surely the truck pool hasn't been going since then. When did it first start and who came up with the idea?
Yeah, so the first event was in 2021, and we came up with the idea the Ballantine Sea Committee were just sort of getting to a point where families were leaving the area after the droughts, and we weren't getting any new fresh faces back in the community. So our population had declined in our school population and our whole community. So it was an idea one of the PNC dads came up with, and we just all agreed it was a great idea, and we just ran with it.
So when I think truck pool, I immediately think two trucks facing in opposite directions playing a tug of war. Is that what we're talking about here?
No. So today we're talking about a team of six who pull a 12-ton prime mover truck 25 metres. And they get three chances, and the fastest time wins the competition.
Six people pulling a 12-ton truck 25 metres. It sounds almost impossible.
Well, it actually, a lot of people do fear that it is, that they will be one of those teams that don't move the truck, but I assure you that, you know, they just get there and their team spirit is on fire, and they do. They manage to get the wheels rolling, and once those wheels are rolling, it's just a matter of keeping them going.
That's amazing. So with the teams, you said six to a team. We're talking six males, six females, mixed teams?
Well, this year we've actually opened it up a little bit. So we've still got our men's and open competition as such,
okay,
and with a women's competition as well. So each winner out of the competition, men or women, they'll take home the winner of each competition will take home
$3,000. $3,000. Wow, that's a nice prize for a 25-metre, I guess it's almost like a tug-of-war with a truck, but you're pulling it along trying to move it, 12-ton. Now, I guess, do the kids find this fun to watch too, or have you got lots of other things for the kids to amuse themselves while mum and dad are giving themselves hernias trying to move 12-ton?
Yeah, actually, the kids do love it. Our kids are really looking forward to it. They love the spirit and the team competition, and they do enjoy watching the parents and their friends, like the people that they see every day pulling these trucks.
Mm-hmm.
But as well as, you know, the competition for the kids, we've got the kids zone this
right.
year, and it's got a jumper castle, mini golf, and inflatable soccer and basketball, and we try and make that is our free kids zone, and we try and open it up so it's exciting for the kids and that they've got a fun full activities of they go crazy, they just go wild, and they're exhausted by the end of the day,
which is probably what you're all hoping for.
Yeah, that's right. Early to bed.
So apart from the kids zone and the truck pool, what else have you got happening out there? Have you got any markets, or have you got food vendors and so on?
Yeah, so this year we've got quite a lot of market stalls turning up, and it's a great chance for anyone who wants to buy a Father's Day present for the next day or leading into Christmas even. So lots of market stalls. One of those is our regular Bush Barber, and he comes out and gives everyone a bit of a tidy up and a fresh haircut. As most of our guys and girls who work on farms, they don't get much of a chance to get into town and have haircuts. So Bush Barber's coming out to us this year, which is fantastic.
So that's Brett Farmer.
Yeah, that's right, Brett Farmer from St. George. He's our local barber.
Fantastic. So apart from the kids' zones and the truck pool, guys, you can get yourself a haircut out there. But you've also got bar services as well, don't you?
Yep. So the Valentine Sea will be running a bar for the day. And as well, the Mungindi Junior Rugby League will be catering barbecue lunch and dinner. And we'll also have some Thai food as well. So there's a bit of something for everyone.
So the things that you raise, the money that you raise from, say, your bar, which is open from 12:30 till 8:30, so 8 hours of bar sales, I guess that's all going back into the Fallon School?
That's right. All the profits that we raise for our event will go towards the students and the school, the Fallon State School. In the previous 2 years, we raised enough money to buy a new playground and shade cover. So that wouldn't have happened without this event and our amazing sponsors.
So if people want to come out there, the event is actually on Saturday the 31st, which is next Saturday, the 31st of August. The gates open at 12 noon. So if they'd like to come in advance, because there's so many things to see and do in Thallon, isn't there?
There are, yeah. You can walk around for a good day looking at different things, sculptures, art, you know, have lunch at the pub or, you know, even dinner the night before. You've got great coffee at the coffee shop. Yeah, there is a lot to see and do and a lot for, well, just there's something for everyone out here in Thallon.
Absolutely brilliant. I mean, it's not just a place you'd come to and look at this event and then go the next day, because I'm just noticing you've, apart from the great coffee shop, you've also got William the Wombat, you've got the Francis Hotel, the Watering Hole Heritage Art Trail, Thallon History Trails, you've also got the GrainCorp Silo, so there's a lot of things to see and do in the town of itself.
Yeah, there is. It's definitely worthwhile a visit.
Now, what about costs? The gates open at 12 noon on Saturday the 31st. Are there any costs involved?
Well, that's the exciting thing. We are a free, fun event. So there is the a great chance for families and people who don't get to go to the shows or other, you know, bigger activities to come and enjoy a free, fun day out. And anything that you buy does go straight into, you know, something you receive and going into supporting the community.
Fantastic. So whereabouts is it located? Where in Thallon itself is this event taking place? Is it at the school? Is it at a showground? How can people find it?
Yeah, so our event will be, well, kind of in the shadows of the big solo mural, but it'll be right next door to our Thallon State School, in between Thallon State School and the cricket oval.
Okay. So it's just going to be a fabulous event. If people do want to stay there, you've got various types of accommodation in Thallon, don't you? You've got the caravan parks and there's B&Bs and all kinds of things there for people travelling through.
Well, there's the Thallon Hotel, the Thallon Pub, does pub accommodation and a sort of living quarters or, quarters. But there's, caravan park with powered sites and unpowered sites.
Okay. So what's the best place for people to find out more about this? Have you got a Facebook page? I know you've got the website, which is thallontruckpool.com.au. Have you got anything else where our listeners can look up some information?
Yeah, definitely. So if you wanted to go straight through to the website, that'll link you into our Facebook and Instagram pages. Otherwise, Facebook is, or Google Thallon Truck Pool.
And I notice on your website, because I'm looking at it right now, Thallon Truck Pool, you've got nominate now. So is that if they want to nominate to be a team to try and pull one of these oversized monster trucks?
Yeah, that's right. Yep. So if they're keen to get a team involved, they're best to nominate today or any day leading into the event. But the sooner we know that you're coming along, the better. And on that link, you need to just put your buddies and names and choose a song and a team name.
Right.
And, then we'll see you on Saturday the 31st of August.
Saturday the 31st of August, listeners. Gates open at 12 noon. All the action starts from about 1 o'clock, is that right?
Yep, that's right. The competition starts at 1, but if teams are registering, they need to be there probably by about 12 o'clock would be great.
Okay, and the bar, fellas, is open from 12:30. Till 8:30 if you feel like you need a little bit of Dutch courage. And after that, you might want to get yourself a haircut to look the best for mum the next day. And we got Brett Farmer, the Bush Barber. He's going to look after that too, make you look fabulous for Father's Day.
Yeah, that's right. And thanks to our sponsors, Brown and Hurley. They're our ongoing sponsors. We love having them come out and support our event.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Jenna, for taking the time to be part of our program this afternoon. I'm sure you're going to have a wonderful day. We pray the weather's good. What's the weather likely to be? Have you had a long-range report? Because I could imagine nothing worse than trying to pull a 12-ton truck 25 metres if the ground is all wet and boggy.
Yeah, it is. We're all looking at the forecast. It sometimes can be a bit tricky to predict. So even though they say a couple of mil here, we may not get that. For the farmers, we hope that they might get what they need. For in town, you know, we could leave it a week or two. So.
Fantastic. Well, I'm going to have to wind this up now. Thank you so much, Jenna, for taking the time to be part of the show. Before we let you go, though, I've got to play a song for you, and it has to be Aussie. Do you have a favourite Aussie singer or band?
Oh, I love listening to Jimmy Barnes.
Right. Jimmy Barnes. Barnesy, what about the song? You got a favourite by him?
Well, I think for today I'll have to go with Working Class Man.
Working Class Man. Look, truck drivers are working class men, and I'm just looking at this website of yours, and if you want to check it out, listeners, thallantruckpool.com.au, you're going to see a bunch of working class fellas there in singlets and stubbies trying to pull a 12-metre truck 25 metres to win a cash prize. And don't forget to check out the bar if you're out there. All the money raised at the bar is going to the Thallan State School PNC Association, and Jana is one of the members of that committee. Thank you so much for taking the time, Jana, and I hope you have a fabulous day out there next Saturday.
Yeah, thanks, Phil. We would love to see you out there, but if not, maybe in our next event.
Absolutely. We'll be back with more of Roman Oz, folks, straight after Jimmy Barnes's Working Class Man.
Working hard to make a living, bringing shelter from the rain. A father's son left to carry all blue denim in his veins. Whoa, he's a working class man.
Oh,
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page or allaussieradio.com.au.
Tune in next week for more Roman Oz.